Hi, morning everybody, once again. I've never seen such a full house. Obviously not because I'm speaking. Definitely not. But funny enough, I was thinking about this talk for a long, long time. And after reading our Daily Bread, which you've all had, September the 13th, I thought this would make a good talk. And the title is called Stay a While. And I'll just give you the gist of it. You probably remember reading it anyway. And David McCasland, who wrote it, actually said, during a discussion of the Lord of the Rings movie trilogy, a teenager said he preferred his stories in books rather than movies. When asked why, the young man replied, "With a book, I can stay there as long as I want." There's something to be said for the power of lingering in a book, especially the Bible, and inhabiting the stories there. How easy it is to rush through our Bible reading without pondering the people and events in the text. Our self-imposed time schedule robs us of going deeper into God's truth and his plan for our lives. Yet when we are willing to stay a while, we find ourselves caught up in the real-life dramas of people like us who chose to stake their lives on God's faithfulness. And the same day, because it was a Wednesday, I usually go down to Cardiff to pick up newspapers from a little cafe called Bambi's. And I met Peter in there. And we were talking about the fact about how fast the world was moving on. We just don't have time to sort of sit and think about things. And I thought, well, Bambi's is a lovely place. It's quiet, it's restful, as it seems compared to taste buds. Now, taste buds, I love taste buds, don't get me wrong. Tom's been there, and so has Dorothy. Dorothy's been to Bambi's as well, so she knows the difference. And of course, in Taste Buds, they've got this low-level radio, which Peter can't stand. And there's lots and lots of noise, because you get families and groups there as well, which you only contrast if you've actually been to the two different cafes. And you know, Pete and I, we were talking about getting away from things this week because, of course, all the feast sites are on, aren't they? And we thought, well, it'd be nice to get to some feast. And Peter, love him, you know, he put all his activities on hold this week. And we still haven't done anything, have we, Pete? But there we go. That's the sort of procrastination that you get in later life. But when the half marathon was on, both Taste Buds and Bambi's were shut. So neither of us arranged to meet. And of course, Pete and I, sometimes we go to Sunday churches in Cardiff. We've been to Rumney Baptist Church, Rumney Methodist Church, the Gospel Hall, Lisvane Baptist Church, Cruis Road. We've been to lots and lots of churches in Cardiff. And I hadn't thought about putting this talk together, really, until I actually read this article, you know, in our Daily Bread. And I thought that would make a good, you know, a good talk, because we do live in a stressful world. We really do live in a stressful world. And yesterday morning, I went up the garden to pray and to meditate, as I usually do. The sun was shining, there was not a breath of wind, and I was listening to the birds tweeting away. It was very warm and hot. And I was looking at the autumn colours, and I thought, you know, I'd love to get my paint box out this morning. And I thought, it's Friday, I've got too much to do. First of all, I've got to go to the bank to get some money. Got to go to the post office to pick up my mail because they won't deliver where I am because it's too dangerous for the postman to cross the road because of health and safety has stopped him doing that. Normally I then go shopping in town after I picked up from the bank, so I pick up my fruit and veg, and beetroot tops are my favourite, very rich in iron and vitamin C, and well, they're an alternative to spinach, which is very expensive but a lot sweeter. 11 o'clock then I go and meet the swimmers, or ex-Newport Swimming Club swimmers, in the Queen's Hotel for an hour. 12 o'clock then, I'm up the road to Echo Club, which is for all those singles that are over 60, and they wrote me in there for various things. I've given talks there as well. And then I actually went for a swim, and I thought to myself, I've got to get back now, I've got to rush back now, because my cleaner Pat is going to be there at home. And I thought, this is absolutely mad. I'm retired. I've been retired a long time. And I'm finding my life is absolutely full of stuff. And I just can't get away from it. And while I was meditating up the garden, it suddenly came to me about that wonderful Newport author called W.H. Davis. I don't know whether you've heard of him, but he wrote a book called Supertramp. Absolutely brilliant. And he was a tramp. There are tramps today. We're not talking about the homeless now. These are people that actually enjoy, you know, being alone and going around the countryside. And he tramped all over the UK and the US. I'm not sure about France, because as we know, George Orwell wrote a book about France, Down and Out in Paris. Another wonderful man who wrote about his travels. And of course, my friend Derek, who died 2 years ago, we've been on all the Western Islands, off Scotland, bicycling and camping. One of the islands, absolutely magical, they call it the last wilderness of Britain, is called the Island of Jura. And I've been wanting to go up there for a long time, after seeing a 40-foot standing wave coming between the islands of Scarborough and Jura itself, and it's called the Witch of Corrievachan. And if you go home and Google it, you will have some interesting things there. And I wanted to go there. But sadly, when we got there, it was at half moon, so the tides weren't all that great. So I wasn't all that impressed with the whirlpool. But on passing that, we actually passed a single house, white house, down at the top end of Jura. Can't remember the name of the place now. But the house was called Barn Hill. And that's where George Orwell actually wrote Animal Farm, and that's where he died as well. He just wanted to get right away from civilization. And I thought about this, and I thought, do you know, tomorrow morning I'm going to tell everybody about this poem which I suddenly came to me. W.H. Davis wrote, "What is this world if full of care? We have no time to stand and stare. To stand beneath the boughs and stare as long as sheep and cows." And I thought, how appropriate. God has given us this wonderful world to look around. And what do you see? All you see is people. There they are in town. There they are with their mobile phones. They're either texting, or they're on there. Or when they're home, they're either watching television, or they're on Facebook, or they're playing PlayStations or something else. They don't go outside and see God's wonderful world. Absolutely amazing. Anyway, I thought, now what does the Bible have to say about this? And I thought, well, yes, peace and quiet. What did Jesus do? Well, Jesus, of course, he lived a very pressured life, didn't he? Don't forget, he was totally human, although he was God. He lived like us, and he felt the pressure of people all the way around. He did his best not to have many possessions. And I'm afraid we all live with possessions, don't we, today? And he used to try and get away as often as he possibly could to pray to his Father. And if we can have the first quote, can you do the King James, please, Richard?
Yeah.
This was the first one that came to mind, not Jesus, but this is Psalm 45, verse 10. And this came to mind when I was thinking about W.H.'s poem. Is that the 40? Oh, gosh. Probably. No, it is 45:10. Is that King James?
Yep.
Hearken, O daughter, and consider, and incline thy ear. Forget also thine own people and thy father's house. That wasn't the one I was thinking of. What I was thinking of was, be quiet and know that I am God. So I don't know whether that's just before it or after it. But anyway, we can have a look at Matthew 14. This is about Jesus now, Matthew 14. Verses 19 to 23. Let's have a look and see what it says there. And he commanded the multitude to sit down on the grass, and took the 5 loaves and 2 fishes, and looking up to heaven, he blessed and brake and gave the loaves to his disciples and to the multitude. And they did all eat and were filled, and they took up the fragments that remained, 12 baskets full. And they that had eaten were about 5,000 men, besides women and children. And straightway Jesus constrained his disciples to get into a ship and go before him unto the other side, while he sent the multitude away. What did he do? And when he had sent the multitude away, he went up to a mountain apart to pray. When the evening was come, he was there alone. He just wanted to get away. You know, he'd had a busy day, stressful day. We know what it's like to be stressful. And Mark chapter 6 says almost the same thing. Verses 38 to 46. He saith unto them, how many loaves have you got? Go and see. And when they knew, they said, 5 and 2 fishes. And he commanded them to make all sit down by companies upon the green grass. They sat down in ranks by hundreds and by fifties. And when he had taken the 5 loaves and the 2 fishes, he looked up to heaven, and blessed and brake the loaves, and gave them to his disciples to set before them. The 2 fishes divided he among them. They did all eat, and were filled, and they took up 12 baskets full of fragments, and of the fishes. And they that did eat of the loaves were about 5,000 men. So there must have been women and children as well. So you're talking about probably 15,000 altogether. I mean, that's a vast amount of, vast quantity of people. I shouldn't say amount, because if you can count them up, then it's a number, isn't it? A vast number of people. And straight away, he constrained his disciples to get into the ship and go to the other side. He didn't even want to talk to them. You know, he'd had enough of them. And they went before unto Bethsaida, and then he went. And when he sent them away, he departed in a mountain to pray. He wanted to be alone. We all know what it's like. We want to get away. We want to be on our own. And Luke 6, verse 12. Luke 6, verse 12. And it came to pass in those days that he went out into the mountain to pray, and continued all night in prayer to God. He needed being renewed and refilled with the Holy Spirit. Although he was filled with the Spirit, he still needed it to be renewed and recharged. And if we have a look at Mark 4, verse 39, this is something else that I experienced yesterday. This came to mind. And he arose and rebuked the wind and said unto the sea, peace, be still. And the wind ceased. And there was a great calm. And I felt this great calm yesterday morning. And I thought, yes, I know exactly what Jesus is talking about. Mark 5, verse 21. When Jesus was passed over again by the ship unto the other side, much people gathered unto him, and he was nigh unto the sea. 22. Behold, there cometh one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name. When he saw him, he fell at his feet. And the thing is, of course, he was still acting and working all the time. He just couldn't get away. And when you think about it, the devil, to keep everyone's minds from God's beauty and also from the Bible and everything else, what does he do? He keeps us on the treadmill. You know, we are now working faster and faster, more and more, as I said before, we've got mobile phones. Pete and I, we leave our mobile phones at home. I used to get most annoyed with Peter when I couldn't get hold of him. And I thought, it's a good idea because nobody can get in touch with him. He's not stressed. And when you think about it, it's a good idea. And people are interested in things today. Everything revolves around things. Let's have a look at Psalm 135, verse 13 to 18. Well, we'll have a look at Psalm 135, 13 first. Then we go to 15. Thy name, O Lord, endureth forever, and thy memorial, O Lord, throughout all generations. 15. The idols of the heathen are silver and gold, the work of men's hands. And you can think of motor cars, if you like. You can think of rings, you can think of mobile phones, you can think of computers. Think of all this, you know, this gadgetry. All right, we can't do without it today. You know, it's most interesting. Verse 16. They have mouths, but they speak not. They have eyes, have they, but they see not. And of course, in the past, in the 60s and 70s, they used to make motor cars look like people, didn't they? So you've got your two headlights there, and you've got the grill in the front there looking like a mouth. So it looked as if it was, you know, if you like, an idol. And of course, it's a modern day idol. Verse 18, what have we got here? They have ears, but they hear not. Neither is there any breath in their mouths. They that make them are like unto them. So is everyone that trusteth in them. And in that case, I'm thinking of these big monster cars that you see people riding around in. And it reminds me of a skit that Dawn French did, you know, with her partner. Can't remember her name now.
Saunders.
Yeah, Jennifer Saunders. Absolutely brilliant. Where these two ladies were taking the kids to school. And you see one lady dropping her kids off, you know, with an ordinary car like I've got, a little car. Jennifer Saunders, she drives up and she's got a great big... A great big Land Rover. She drops her kids off. And then you've got another lady comes along and she's got one of these Humvees. She drops her kids off, her Humvee. Got to keep the kids safe. You know, that was the argument all the time. Got to keep the kids safe, so we've got to get a bigger and bigger car. And lo and behold, finally, Dawn French comes along. And what is she driving? She's driving a tank. And the kids are released from underneath the tank. You know, the gun is there and everything else. And there's Dawn, you know, there's Dawn French. So we've got to keep the kids safe. So we've got to get the biggest vehicle we possibly can. So if anybody bumps into us, you know, they get smashed up. And I thought, well, this is the modern world that we live in. And you think, well, you know, it's how safe do you want to be? You know, at the end of the day, you know, we've got to rely upon God for our safety. We've got to rely upon God to keep us safe. And anyway, there are mentioned in the Old Testament people who were so stressed that they actually wanted to die. And Moses was one of them, but I couldn't find the exact verses. I know Tom, tried to show me this morning, but it's not the one I was wanting. It wasn't the one I was thinking of. But anyway, Moses also knew the virtue of solitude. We have a look at Exodus chapter 3, verse 1 to 10. What did Moses have to say there? Now, Moses kept the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian. He led the flock to the backside of the desert and came to the mountain of God, even to Horeb. Now, he was on his own. He was there looking after these sheep. Verse 2. And the angel of the Lord appeared unto him in a flame of fire out of the midst of a bush. And he looked, and behold, the bush burned with fire. The bush was not consumed. Now, as we've heard before, Brian was telling us about this. You know, to have bushfires in that part of the world, quite common. But the thing is, they burn and they just die out. Who are you pointing to? Tom. Oh, it was Tom, was it? Oh, sorry, Tom. That's old age for you, isn't it? Right.
I know it well.
Yeah, there we are. Tom knows it well. Verse 3. And Moses said, I will now turn aside and see this great sight. Why the bush is not burned? Verse 4. And when the Lord saw that he turned aside to see, God called unto him out of the midst of the bush and said, Moses, Moses. And he said, Here am I. And he said, Draw not nigh hither, put off thy shoes from off thy feet, for the place whereupon thou standest is holy ground. Moreover, he said, I am the God of thy father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look upon God. And the Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people, which are in Egypt, and have heard their cry by reason of their taskmasters, for I know their sorrows. And if you remember, Moses also found out that he was one of the Israelites, although he was brought up in the palace of the Pharaohs, and he tried to do the best he possibly could for his people. And of course, one night he went and accidentally killed a man, and he had to run away because he knew that his life was in danger. And I am come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians, to bring them up out of the land unto a good land and a large, and a land flowing with milk and honey, unto the place of the Canaanites, and the Hittites, and the Amorites, and the Perizzites, and the Hivites, and the Jebusites. Now therefore, behold, the cry of the children of Israel is come unto me. I have also seen the oppression wherewith the Egyptians oppress them. Come now therefore, and I will send thee unto Pharaoh, that thou mayest bring forth my people and the children of Egypt, Israel out of Egypt. Now you can just imagine, poor old Moses, think, hang on a minute, why me? If I go back there, you know, I'm going to be killed. Well, if we go on to verse 13 and 14. And Moses said unto God, Behold, when I come unto the children of Israel, shall say unto them, The God of your fathers hath sent me unto you. They shall say unto me, What is his name? What shall I say unto them? And God said unto Moses, I am that I am. And he said, Thus shalt thou say unto the children of Israel, I am hath sent me unto you. So God has no past, he's omnipresent, and he has no future. Or he's there all the time. He doesn't look to a future, because God doesn't, he's not stuck, if you like, in the time interval which we are. Past, present, future. He's there all the time. And anyway, if we have a look at Exodus 16 and 17. Exodus 16. Well, we start, well, actually, Exodus 16 and 17. It goes on about the fact that the children now have actually left Israel, and they are now in the desert. Manna is falling all the time, and of course the manna comes down, and they just disappeared out there through there. And 17, it's the manna, the people get fed up with this, and poor old Moses didn't know what to do. Anyway, if we look at Exodus 19 verse 3. Moses went up unto God, and the Lord called unto him out of the mountain, saying, Thus shalt thou say to the house of Jacob, and tell the children of Israel, Ye have seen what I have done unto the Egyptians, and how I bare you on eagle's wings, and brought you to myself. Even Moses actually went up to pray to God. And if we have a look at Exodus 18 again, verse 5, his father-in-law has heard about what Moses had done, these wonderful things, so his father-in-law now has come down. Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, came with his sons and his wife unto Moses into the wilderness, where he encamped at the mount. He said unto Moses, I, thy father-in-law, Jethro, come unto thee, and thy wife and her two sons are with thee. Verse 13, if we can go on to that. And it came to pass on the morrow that Moses sat to judge the people. The people stood by Moses from the morning until the evening. You think, no, he's doing this every day. If you're doing that, you're going to be stressed out, aren't you? And this shows that, you shouldn't allow the job to make work for you. You actually make the job work for you rather than working for the job. You make it work for the job, then you're going to be stressed out. Anyway, father-in-law gave him wise counsel, because what does he say? If he carries on, verse 14, when Moses' father-in-law saw that he did people, he said, what is this thing that thou doest to people? Why sittest thou thyself alone, and all the people stand by thee from morning to evening? Moses said unto his father-in-law, because the people come unto me to inquire of God. And 16, when they come to the matter, they come unto me, and I judge between one and the other, and I do make them know the statutes of God and his laws. Moses' father-in-law said unto him, the thing that thou doest is not good. Why, he's doing too much. How can he not do it? Thou wilt surely wear away both thou and this people that is with thee, for this thing is too heavy for thee. Thou art not able to perform it thyself alone. Hearken now unto my voice, I'll give thee counsel, and God shall be with thee. Be thou for the people of God wood, that thou mayest bring the causes unto God. And thou shalt teach them ordinances and laws, and shalt show them the way wherein they must walk, and the work that they must do. Moreover, thou shalt provide out of thee all the people, able men, such as fear God, men of truth, hating covetousness, and place such over them to be rulers of thousands, rulers of hundreds, rulers of fifties, and rulers of tens. And let them judge the people, and be all seasons, and it shall be that every great matter they shall bring unto thee, but every small matter they shall judge. So shall it be easier for thyself, and they shall bear the burden with thee. Now, isn't that interesting? We've got the same sort of thing today. You know, we've got the magistrate's court, you know, where minor things are taking place, and if you're not happy with that, then you sort of go to county court. And if you're not happy with that, then you go to Crown Court. And if you're not happy with that, then you go and appeal, you know, to the High Court. And if you're not happy with that, then you go to the Houses of Parliament. You go to the House of Lords. And they're the ones who make the final judgment. And you can see, you know, it's actually based on this. And you think, what a good way of actually doing it. Anyway, the next thing we do is go to Elijah. Elijah the Tishbite, and you'll find him in 1 Kings 17, verse 1. What does it have to say? Elijah the Tishbite was in the inhabitants of Gilead, and said unto Ahab, as the Lord God of Israel liveth, before thee I stand, there shall not be dew nor rain these years, but according to my word. So he's actually told Ahab that God is not going to send him any rain for 3 years. And just in passing, if you have a look at verses 10 to 16, you'll find that in fact, although there was no food, food there, and everybody was starving, in fact, he ended up in a widow's house. And he actually said to the widow, you know, don't worry about it. Give me a meal, because your meal barrel will always be full. Your oil barrel will always be full. And these are miracles that were there. And from verse 17 to 24, we'll have a look at that, because again, this is another miracle in the Old Testament. And it came to pass after these things that the son of the woman, the mistress of the house, fell sick, and his sickness was so sore that there was no breath left in him. Yeah, 18. And she said unto Elijah, what have I to do with thee, thou man of God? Art thou come unto me to call my sin to remembrance, and to slay my son? And he said unto her, give me thy son. And he took him out of her bosom, carried him up into a loft where he abode, and laid him upon his own bed. And he cried unto the Lord, and said, O Lord my God, hast thou also brought evil upon the widow with whom I sojourn, by laying her son? And he stretched himself upon the child 3 times, and cried unto the Lord, and said, O Lord my God, I pray thee, let this child's soul come to him again. And the Lord heard the voice of Elijah, and the soul of the child came unto him again, and he revived. another miracle in the Old Testament. If we go on then to 1 Kings chapter 18, this is where Elijah now is confronted with the prophets of Baal and the offering. And of course he actually says, you know, to these prophets, well, why don't you call a bit louder, you know, maybe Baal, your God, you know, he's on a journey or he's sleeping or he's doing something. Anyway, we know the story. At the end of the day, he told them to get barrels of water, pour it all over the altar itself, and then he prayed up to God. And of course, you know, the wonderful thing was that the whole sacrifice was totally burnt up. And of course, then he told the people then, right, he said, right, get hold of these prophets and kill them all. Verse 42 of chapter 18. 1 Kings 18, verse 42. So Ahab went up to eat and to drink, and Elijah went up to the top of the Carmel, and he cast himself down upon the earth and put his face between his knees. So he went up there to pray to God. And then we have 1 Kings 19, and of course here we have this woman, maligned, she's still used today, isn't she? It's Jezebel. And said to his servant, go up now, look towards the sea. And he went to... Sorry?
19, what verse?
Well, it's verse 4, actually. Verse 4. Once he'd heard that Jezebel was after him, of course, he was on the run. And he was so distraught, he actually put himself between a day's journey into the wilderness, came and sat down under a juniper tree, and he requested for himself that he might die. He said, is it enough now, O Lord? Take away my life, for I am not better than my father's. He was absolutely stressed out after this. You just imagine confronting, you know, all the prophets of Baal, confronting King Ahab, and then finding that his wife has sent all these soldiers after him to kill him. You know, you think he'd be on the run, and you think, well, hang on a minute. You know, this is God's man. Why don't you pray to God for, you know, for providence to look after you? And it seems to be the last things that we do. Anyway, verse 5 to 10. And as he lay and slept under the juniper tree, behold, then an angel touched him and said unto him, arise and eat. And he looked, and behold, there was a cake, bacon on the coals, and a cruse of water at his head. He did eat and drink and laid him down again. The angel of the Lord came unto him a second time and touched him and said, arise and eat, because the journey is too great for thee. And he arose and he did eat and drink and went in the strength of that meat 40 days and 40 nights unto Horeb, the mount of God. And he came thither unto a cave and lodged there. And behold, the word of the Lord came to him, and he said unto him, what are you doing here now, Elijah? And he said, I have been very jealous for the Lord God of hosts. The children of Israel have forsaken thy covenant, thrown down thine altars, slain thy prophets with the sword, and I, even I, only am left, and they seek my life to take it away. And verse 14, what does God actually say to him? And he said, I have been very jealous for the Lord of hosts, because the children of Israel have forsaken. I think we've read that, haven't we? Mm-hmm. Why have we got that twice? Did I? Oh, sorry. Right. Verse 18 then. Anyway, this is God's reply. Yet, says God, I have left me 7,000 in Israel, all the knees which have not bowed unto Baal, and every mouth which has not kissed him. So that's amazing, isn't it? You think you're the only Christian that's left in the land, and God has got 7,000 others. And you look at the world and you think how terrible a place it is. Christianity's dying out. And it isn't. In reality, you know, sadly, Christians seem to hide their Christianity underneath a bushel. They don't come out with a light, you know, lighting, and lighting with a globe. And just to finish off then, we have a look at Matthew 6, verse 31. Therefore, take no thought, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or where shall we be clothed? And if you have a look at Philippians 4, verse 6, this is the final verse. What does Paul actually endeavour us to do? He says, be careful for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known unto God. Amen.